Hello, and welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and this is episode number 214. Today, I'm featuring an interview with Kirsten DeLeo, and we'll be talking about her new book, Present Through the End, which I think you'll really enjoy. It's a fantastic resource. And I wanted to remind you that back in episode number 187, I talked at length about how to live in the present moment right here, right now, and why it's extremely important for us in our personal lives to learn how to be in the present moment as much as possible, but also important if we're caring for the dying or the seriously ill or working with patients at all, that we can train ourselves to really become tuned in and focused in the present moment. It makes us better listeners. It opens our heart for more compassion. And we can really provide much more of a healing, safe space for others when we're able to be fully in the present moment. It's such an important topic. That's why I wanted to interview Kirsten and talk about it even more, and wanted to just encourage all of you to listen to this interview, learn what you can from my conversation with Kirsten. You can go back to episode number 187 and review that as well for some of my own stories and tips about becoming in the present moment, becoming more focused in the present, and utilizing the present moment in service of others, but also to enhance our own lives and our own ability to enjoy life and really make the most of everything life offers us, no matter what's happening. No matter what kind of suffering we're experiencing, no matter what kind of stress we're under, no matter what's happening in the world around us, the more we can come into alignment in the present moment, the more we're capable of experiencing joy in any situation and also experiencing and expressing love. So this is such an important topic that I hope you'll really listen in and tune in to what Kirsten and I talk about in this interview, and also consider ordering her book. I mentioned it in the interview a few times, but it's a helpful resource if you're someone who spends time at the bedside with people who are suffering from terminal illness or in the dying process or working with families who are dealing with the death of a loved one. Kirsten has so many beautiful resources in her book of practices, poems, and beautiful writings and stories that you can use as a resource. And so we'll get into all of that in the interview. I'll share how to get a hold of her book, and we'll talk a lot more about that. But I just wanted to give this little introduction and encouragement. I hope you'll listen in. Stay tuned until the very end, and I'll come back on with a couple of takeaways and a few announcements for you. So now I'll go ahead with my conversation with Kirsten DeLeo. Here we go. Today, I'm happy to welcome back my guest, Kirsten DeLeo. We have spoken two times in the past, and it's very exciting for me to have Kirsten with me again as we announce her new book that she's just written. But before we get our conversation started, I'll tell you a little bit more about her. Kirsten is an international trainer with the Spiritual Care Program. She's been teaching in the field of contemplative caregiving for more than 25 years. She is a counselor, and she has been immersed in Buddhist practice for over 20 years. She's the author of the book Present Through the End, A Caring Companion's Guide for Accompanying the Dying, and the teacher of Authentic Presence courses, which we will talk about a little bit in our conversation today. And you can learn more about Kirsten and her work at her website, which is kirstendeleo.com, KirstenDeLeo.com. Kirsten, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Karen. I'm really happy to be here today.
Well, it's so nice to talk with you again, and I'm excited that we get to talk about your new book. But I wanted to just mention at the beginning that I feel the work that you are doing is so very, very important, and it occurred to me
today that for me as a medically trained person, we spend years and years learning about medical care and medical practices. But when it comes to caring for the dying, in fact, dying is much more a spiritual process. I mean, it is a physical process that's happening, but the medical care of the dying is very straightforward. And so because dying itself is a spiritual process, most of us in medicine, and I dare say most people in our society, have no training whatsoever around the spiritual issues of the dying. And so I think the training that you're doing and the book that you have written are so very important because they address the spiritual aspect of the dying process.
Oh, thank you, Karen. Yes, so it's essential, it's crucial, isn't it? That the process of dying, end of life care, is just not just a medical process and death. It's just so much more than a medical event. It's a sacred time. It's a sacred process, and it's a sacred moment. And so, when we're entering the space as a companion, as a caregiver, either as a family caregiver or a professional caregiver, we too enter sacred space. We may not necessarily call it that, when we are open, we can actually feel we enter a deeper dimension and with a person when we are open to it and to acknowledge this, and also for caregivers. And so the Spiritual Care Program is an international program. And so we've been teaching caregivers for, more than 20 years, these what we call contemplative tools and resources to help us, to allow us to bring our full selves to the bedside, to really be there for somebody who's dying, who's grieving, and touched by issues of ill health, of loss, of change in our lives, and for the caregiver and as well as the person. So we also have care centers. We have a spiritual care center in Ireland, a beautiful one, and near Berlin in Germany. So we're offering care and education, personal growth and spiritual growth, and being at the bedside, they all go hand in hand. So it's not separated. And we decided, the team, the US team here, decided to call the program now Authentic Presence, because we still have a certificate in contemplative end-of-life care for professionals. And that was always a mouthful. People could never remember the title or the name of the program. And so then we said, what is it? And so we asked our students, what did you take away? What is the main thing you actually learned? And they told us it's around being authentic and being present. So that's how this new name, Authentic Presence, came into being. Did the whole renaming this year, so it's also fresh.
Well, I love that. I love the name Authentic Presence, and I had the privilege of taking that training with you a few years ago in a retreat. And I wanted to say that two things that really stood out for me from the training. Number one was the amount of time that we spent in silence and stillness during the training, and how that is so missing in our society today. And I think that was one of the most valuable things for me. And not just silence, not speaking, but silence and being away from our telephones and the screen and the computer screen, that opportunity to step away and just go within. And I found that to be extremely valuable as part of the training, just because we don't get very many opportunities in our day-to-day lives to be still and quiet like that.
That's so true. That I hear that so often. What you're describing is really healing, isn't it? That to be with ourselves, especially when we are like you, a professional caregiver, a palliative care physician, seeing many people, and you're always responding to other people's needs, and just to take that time out. So So authentic presence is a skill strain, but at the same time, it's also our residential retreats are retreats. It really is a time out where we can really enter a deeper space within ourselves and just to be with ourselves and have a chance to process, to digest, and just to be. And that's actually the strength. And that's also what I've experienced myself being at somebody's bedside. The most healing thing we can bring is really our full self and being present. To really step back from doing. So much time we spend in doing, and it's needed at times, but at the very end, the being part, that's really the connecting with our own goodness and with a person and being present in this very painful time, but also when we're actually there and sharing that space, holding the space. It's also very beautiful. I mean, I find incredibly beautiful. And the person who's dying is so vulnerable. And as a caregiver, and I know it for my own self, is also always a tendency and or this belief or, yeah, I have to protect myself from it, you know. I mean, I have to be strong. I have to be the caregiver, you know, the whole notion of caregiving. You know? So it's so the separation. And then the separation there is actually deep, I find, over the years. There's also pain that comes with it that I, by trying to keep the person and what they experience at arm's length, I'm also feel cut off by from myself, from my own experience. And when I was, entering end-of-life care, the word love, or you, there's actually that you care for your patients, and there is even the feeling of love, that was just not, you know, not acceptable. But I feel like this is what it is deep down, and it's not this intimate, you know, love we have in relationships, but it's this human love, this love for another human being, and it's so beautiful. And that's, yeah, if we allow ourselves to enter that space and touch into that and be there, it nurtures us as well.
Yes, oh, that's so true. Well, Kirsten, your new book is called Present Through the End, A Caring Companion's Guide for Accompanying the Dying. And it truly is an amazing guidebook for those who are working with the dying, whether professionals or lay people. But I was just curious about what made you decide to write this book?
Honestly, I really thought a long time if I should do this. People ask me over the years, you know, why you should write a book, you know, it's in you. I couldn't quite see it. I thought, well, there are so many good books out there, you know, why? And then I realized that the question of people often ask me, what can I say? Or do I get phone calls from friends or people I know I'm caring for people and training professionals and also family caregivers. Is there anything I can do or say to make it better? And there's so much pain behind this question, and at the same time, so much love and care. And I realized, oh no, maybe there's a way of doing something that's very practical and very simple, and at the same time, inspiring. It's maybe it's a funny thing to say, but it's like a cheerleader that, yes, you can do this, and here I show you how. They're really practical tools, simple tools and resources that have helped me based by my own meditative practice and training and things we've been teaching an authentic presence with the faculty. And I also realize we all need companions on the path. I have never done this work alone. Even sometimes it feels quite lonely, but we need somebody at our side. So I was thinking, oh yeah, a companion for the companions. And initially I started out as a small, kind of small booklet for my students and people I know to give to them. And then when I actually sat down it just grew and grew and grew. And I realized, and a friend who helped me a bit with the editing process said, actually, Kirsten, you actually, it's a book. You realize that. And really. Mm-hmm. So that's how it came about. And so I really hope it helps people to say, well, yes, I'm really scared. I don't know what I should say or should be doing, but I'm here. So that's, if the book accomplishes that, you know, that then I'm really happy. And it really inspires and encourages people to do that, to be very present and to be fully there for their loved ones, for their patients, you know.
And I wanted to say that it is a small book, small enough that it can fit easily in a bag or purse. And it's something that people, if people who are already doing end of life work, can carry with them at all times. But I really think all of us, if we know that we're going to be caring for a loved one, or we know someone who is in that position, it's something we would want to have handy at the bedside, because as you mentioned, it is full of practical tools and practices really that people can use in the moment to help them when they aren't sure what to do or how to be there with a loved one.
Yeah, that was really my intent and my wish. Practical tools, the step by step, it really tells you, you know, shows you from the moment, you know, oh, I'm getting ready to make maybe the first visit and phone call. I just heard, wow, what can I say and do now? And then it guides you through the entire process, through the journeys, the book journeys with a person, so you can open up and at every stage where you are at, and you find things on some, you know, just, well, ways to calm down your own, you know, thoughts and emotions, ways you can connect with a person. And I often get asked, okay, yeah, but tell me, what should I say? You know, just tell me. And I was a bit hesitant in the beginning to actually write it down, but then I realized, no, there are actually things we can say, and there are people need to hear. Somebody who's dying, they need to hear it. And so it's in the book, and ways we can connect with a person, ask a simple question without, but still kind of respecting this person's space, befriending our own mind, being there. And I also find it very helpful to be knowledgeable about the dying process and what we will see. How does it look like? What will we encounter being at the bedside, or, you know, in the person's presence? And to be prepared, really be prepared, but in a very essential way. I kept it really to the essence. What I find, these are the 101, you know, yes. of being at the bedside, and also talking to the medical teams and dealing with family dynamics. And I'm teaching it for now the more than 25 years. I realized at the end of the day, yes, things can be complex, but at the end of the day, it's quite simple. There's simple principles, so they're all in this small book. And I love that you actually can put it in the purse and you can open up any place, and hopefully there's also inspiration. I included also poetry, because for me, poetry reaches a deeper place within ourselves. Yeah, as an inspiration.
Yes, I love the poetry you've included. And I was just sitting here this morning as I was preparing for our interview, I was reading through some of the poems, and they're just poems to be cherished for the deep meaning that they contain. And it's so nice to have them all here in one book. And you can just quickly thumb through, and on every few pages, there's a poem that you can stop and read. And so just to have the book with you, you can open it and glance through it and find inspiration very quickly in the words that are here. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that one of your chapters is titled Preparing to Care. And I really like that idea, that if we honestly think about it, most likely every one of us will at some time or another in our lives become a caregiver for someone that we love, or we will be experiencing the end of life with someone that we love. And practically speaking, each one of us needs to be prepared for that reality to come. And I really liked the fact that you addressed it, that this is how we can prepare ourselves to become a caregiver for someone else. And in my mind, that's something we should all be doing right now, and not wasting time and not waiting, because we can already guess or imagine that we will be called for that, to do that work someday. But so I wanted you to talk a little bit about how can we start to prepare now for the time when we will be caring for someone at the end of life.
I mean, there are different ways in. I think most of us, I think probably many of your listeners, I know they have a parent who is elderly. And so when we know to prepare for it, and so often I hear people, oh, it really took, I feel unprepared, but there's no reason to be unprepared. Especially around end of life care, death and dying, what I find very, very helpful, and I know it's difficult, and to start looking at our own mortality, to really find ways of seeing, well, this moment won't come back, to look at the reality of impermanence, of change, and to start leaning into it a little bit, just in a very gentle way. To what I sometimes call making friends with death, you know, just to leaning into it and see what's there, and considering it's walking alongside us. And because what I found over the years, my own attitudes toward death, dying, illness, suffering, grief, loss, it impacts how I am with a person who's not well, with a patient. And so it kind of leaks out. So whenever I'm not comfortable, if I'm afraid, it speaks, even if I try not to say anything, it speaks through how I am, even my posture, my physical movement. You know, people pick up on that. You know, people at the end of life, they're really sensitive. Their radar system is on high alert, and they can sense if you're comfortable, or if you're comfortable with your own discomfort. If you reach that stage, even that phase, like, wow, yes, I'm scared, but I know that I'm scared and I can hold it. So just to lean into it a little bit. And also learning, I find it very helpful in a preparing stage, just the reflection, contemplation around, oh, yeah, what if I knew I would be dying, you know? What if I look at this day? If I would know I only have that time to live, what would I be doing, you know? To really take that seriously and see. And there are changes when we kind of approach life, our day-to-day living like that. And then starting to befriend our own mind and heart, to see that, wow, I'm not just my thought or emotions. And so that's more on a very deeper personal level. Yeah. So I know there are many guides out in terms of very practical and information. But here I'm talking about the inner world, our inner attitude, and how we are, our frame of mind, our brain, and how we can prepare on an emotional level, on a spiritual level, to being present. And so that's also the fear of, am I enough? I talk to many people, they always think, oh, I'm not good enough to be there. I don't know enough. And that holds that kind of as a barrier. It's a block. You know, when you bring, it's your discomfort is okay, but you also recognize there is love, there is deep care, there is friendship. There's a history, you know, with a person you have, if you're a family caregiver, that's not going away, you know. The person is still alive, to really see the person as a person who's still breathing and alive to the last moment. I find that also very helpful. As a very practical tool in terms of meditative or contemplative practice, I find really setting my intention as a way of preparing to care. When I know I'm going to see somebody or I make the first phone call, to take a moment to settle my mind, see, wow, what's my agenda? You know, what are my hopes, my fears, and considering to let them go. Can imagine to let them melt away. Take a couple of deep breaths, being there, and then really set the intention, may the best thing happen, and may I be of true benefit. And that can just doing that, setting my intention in this way, just takes a moment, you know, and I can do that over and over again. And it prepares the ground. And so I found this very helpful in preparing to care. And the other aspect of seeing the person is just another you, as another human being. It's I find it's, and you probably heard that too in your work, that people are dying, they feel so isolated, alone, and they become a patient, and the patient is terminal, and all of a sudden the whole dynamic changes around them, how we communicate with them, family members, professionals, caregivers. We tiptoe around the person, and so that causes so much unnecessary suffering and pain. So I can just see the person I'm seeing, if it's a patient, it's just another you like me. The person has hopes and fears and dreams. This person accomplished fantastic, beautiful things in his or her life. And also their unfinished business and fears and regrets, just like me. So I find it kind of very, bring it to a human, on a human level.
Oh, well, those are also so very important, Kirsten, as preparing ourselves in advance in order to be there with someone we love at the end of life. And really, I think these can become a lifelong practice, because it prepares us to be with someone else who's dying, but also prepares us for our own end of life. But one thing I wanted to specifically talk to you about is the idea of presence. And I know that your course, Authentic Presence, really focuses on this. But I've had a lot of medical people tell me that they don't quite even understand what presence is or how to be present. And so I feel like that's an area that in our society in particular, we really need to emphasize, so that people understand it and learn how to cultivate presence. And you talk about it a lot in your book, of course, which is called Present Through the End. So do you have some ideas for how people can learn how to be more present in their day-to-day lives, and then also when they're working with the dying?
So authentic presence is a way of being. And I think the first thing is that we actually physically present. Often we are so distracted. So we have so many devices and gadgets, and we're thinking about the next thing to do. But actually being physically present, being mindful of our physical presence, being in our body, being aware of our breath, and relaxing our being, resting in our bodies. And I find that that alone is just the first step. So this mindfulness of the body, being in our body, to slow down. It actually, wow, it helps us to slow down. I think that's the first way of being present, the first stage, slowing down, catching our breath. And I know that sounds so deceptively simple, but it's incredibly powerful, you know, when we slow down, especially if somebody's very vulnerable in pain, that I'm there, you know, I breathe, I'm there, and my internal clock or rhythm is also much slower, so I can match them much better. I'm more intuitive and open. So being mindful of my body, being mindful of my own thoughts and feelings, and And truly listening, really listening. And often we listen already thinking of the next thing to say, but to actually listen and letting the person in. I find it also helpful when I talk about authentic presence as being in my heart space, just to be really being in this heart-centeredness, so this body-centeredness and at the same time heart-centeredness. What helps me sometimes to just put my hand on my heart. For some people, it's their bellies or solar plexus, their chest, you know, just to remind ourselves to come home, to be present, to breathe, and allow our minds to settle. So these are very, very simple, very effective tools to be present. And authentic presence, it doesn't mean we have to do any extraordinary thing here or be a different person. It's just actually reconnecting with who we are, isn't it, essentially. What I call, or in a meditate or in the contemplative teaching, with this inner space, this inner awareness is so much bigger. So much bigger than our thoughts and emotion, our busy minds, and that's where the healing, and that's where the connection actually happens and takes place.
And that's such a good point, because I think when we are working with the dying, or if we're caring for a loved one who's dying, our minds tend to focus so much on what we need to do. What should I do? What should I say? And on the tasks at hand, like make sure the medication dose is on time, make sure the physical aspect of the care is being done properly. And then also we might focus in our own minds on what should I say and how do I say the right thing. But you're reminding us that it's so much more important to simply be there and listen and even say nothing. Just slow down and sit. Do nothing and say nothing can be more valuable for the patient than all of the busyness that's going through our minds of things that we should do or talk about.
And actually, this not doing anything I find it's the greatest intervention, you know, or what we sometimes can offer when there's nothing to say or nothing to do. There's no way to make this situation better, you know. I cannot take this experience away from you. I wish I could. But I find it interesting, Dalai Lama once said that caring for ourselves and caring for others is actually not separate. And it starts with, as a caregiver, with connecting with our own feelings. And that's often very scary, you know, to connect to our feelings and how do we really feel about what's happening. But it feels almost like we are daring, it's a risk taking. But when we do, when we slow down, and when we slow down, we actually feel how we feel. Yeah. And we take that first hurdle, we drop into our heart center. Actually, there is a space, and that's a space we can then enter with a person together. You know? So so to connect with our own thoughts and feelings. And sometimes, I've been with families, there was so much pain around a person dying, especially if it's a young person, and it should not happen to them, you know. And why me? And you have a distraught father or mother, And there's so much pain and suffering and grief and maybe even anger or anger for sure, and on the unfairness of life. If the person then just allow them to feel what they're feeling, but also then to show them that's not all there is, and there is also to enter the space of, but there's also love underneath all of it. There's this love, there's this loving connection, and this is what is needed now, you know, to drop into that, you know. Yeah. And that's many words describing it, but when we actually feel it, you know, it's quite powerful. Yeah.
And that's really beautiful. And it was reminding me of when my own mother was dying and I was at her bedside and taking care of her. I remember the thoughts going through my head, you know, I should be doing something for her. I'm not doing enough. What can, you know, how can I make this better? What should I do? And even almost a feeling of guilt that shouldn't I be doing something more? And so I think this conversation and this point is so important to make for anyone who is a caregiver, that being present is the most important thing you can do, and that you are doing something extremely valuable by sitting and being there and connecting with your loved one. And that is the most meaningful and most impactful thing that you could do for your loved one. And so to remind people of that, so that they, to help them get away from feeling bad about themselves or bad that they're not doing enough, that they're doing the most important work by simply being there and being mm-hmm. present.
Yeah, and also for professional caregivers, you know, and in the trainings I've been doing over the years, there's also for professionals who with great, beautiful, great skills and knowledge and expertise, is still the sense of, am I doing enough? You know, is this good enough? And the fear, or if I show up as a person, well, is that safe? You know, can I do this? But that's also, it's also a beautiful thing when we learn how to do it, to show up as a person. And yeah, and then that's you mentioned your mother, and I think our when my mother was dying, I share this in the book. She was in a large teaching hospital in Germany, university hospital, and the people were just stomping in and out, and students and professors and teams, and there were sometimes 10 people in the room, and it was just too much. And I remember one morning I visited her, and she was silently crying and looking at me and said, you know, they don't see me. They just don't see me. And then I asked her what she meant, and said, well, they don't look at me. And so they really had, that had turned her into a patient. And so objectifying a person, and that's so easily done, and so often unconscious, and without not consciously, you know. But it's a way of dealing with the onslaught of suffering we see, and the caseload of patients, and but it's just this moment of connecting. And so if you just have one person who sits down, is who looks at us and sees us as a person, is that moment will be remembered. I mean, I know my mom, she had then one physician who actually sat down, held her hand and looked at her. And that whole interaction lasted 2 minutes, but he was there present. And I know to the last few days of her death, she remembered, she really treasured that connection, that somebody was willing to be there, willing to show up and be there for her, even if it was difficult, you know. And that's the willingness, just the willingness to be there is incredibly healing.
And I like that point, that being present with someone, and especially for professionals who might have a really busy schedule and lots of patients, that it doesn't require a lot of time, that in fact, just a few moments of sitting in silence and being fully present for someone it's so profound and so powerful. So mm-hmm. I think some really busy professional caregivers might be thinking to themselves, I don't have time for that. I don't have time to sit at the bedside with someone. I have to be on to the next patient and the next task and fill out my paperwork or, you know, enter things on the computer. But what you're describing is how important it was to your mother for a physician to take just maybe 2 minutes of time to be there and sit with her. So I think yeah. That's a really good point to make.
And especially, you know, training young physicians and residents, and just to see that there's the fear of, oh, I can do something wrong or say something wrong. But, you know, if you take that moment of just being and showing up, holding space, it will also nurture you. Because when we ask people, why did you enter the profession?
Honestly, I haven't heard many people as for the money. I mean, they're easier jobs, really, than end-of-life care, palliative care. But it's that there is something, you know, people really love to benefit others and just to draw on that, to really reconnect with this original motivation and nurture that, keep nurturing it. And if it's these few moments of really deep connection, you know, really being there. But that kind of is also a very powerful antidote to deal with stress, you know, deal with burnout. And of course, burnout is also, besides, you know, this really the system which we really need to address, the healthcare system that's really fundamentally broken. But it's also bringing the humanness, humanity back in, and these moments of human connections, and that allow them to nurture us and nourish us as a caregiver.
Exactly. And while, you know, we can't do very much right now to change the difficult realities of the system, like all the documentation and the regulations and the computer programs that people have to deal with, you're so right. It's a powerful antidote to simply choose to be present with patients. And that alone is so nourishing and sustaining for care providers that it can help them cope better with all the other broken parts of the system. And so those who are extremely busy, once again, in their minds might be thinking, but I don't have time for presence. But so I want to emphasize again, but you do, you do. I think, isn't there a saying, someone said this, I'll probably say it wrong, but you should meditate for 1 hour a day, unless you're extremely busy, and then you should meditate even longer, something like that. The busier you are, the more important it is that you take this time out to be present.
And honestly, there's so many healthcare professionals I meet. They're so hungry for it, you know. They're so hungry because that's why they entered the professions, the profession, and that's the helping field. And to really spark that really good heart, you know, that intention and motivation. And this is what I really, truly believe. This is where the revolution can happen and is happening. And I know so many people, then they get together and nurture that. And in groups, they sit together, do their own meditative, reflective, contemplative practice, whether they're Buddhist or Christians or have no background, but they know mindfulness practice is very beficial to them and for them, for their own well-being. And and how they are with each other as a team. I know teams now, I just did a training this last month, and there was a nurse, a pediatric palliative care nurse, and, you know, dealing with children, end-of-life care, I cannot imagine anything harder and emotionally more draining to work in this arena. And she said she has a great team, but they never actually, she said, that we just don't review our cases, our patients, after, you know, the baby has died, because there's so much grief. So we move on to the next, but then accumulates. And she said her team members are slowly burning out and leaving. And so she found a way, because there's one tool called the three goods that you set your good intentions, then you move into the good in the middle of the day or interaction. We can get lost, but you remember your motivation and frame of mind, open, spacious frame of mind and intention, and then good at the end, you also conclude things well. And so she introduced this very simple practice of the three goods. So they start now every single team meeting with 1 minute of silence. People sit there, connect with their good heart and their motivation. Then they have their team meeting. At the end, they conclude with, again, a few moments of silence and dedicating or directing their good hearts, their wishes, their intentions out into the day. So they have support, you know, they're kind of offering out. And she said that changed their whole interaction with each other as a team, and also with their patients. And so having these kind of rituals, so often it doesn't take a big thing. Maybe I believe in these small things that shift our perception, they shift our way of being, they shift our behaviors. That's I think where the revolution lies, of really the change of how we can change, and then coming together as a community, coming together as a society, and look at how do we actually care for people at the end of life.
That's very inspiring to me, this idea that we can create a revolution within healthcare simply through our own practices by joining together with our team. And what you just described, the three goods, which is in the book, but it's a matter of 2 minutes total, a minute at the beginning of a meeting and 1 minute at the end, 2 minutes that could change everything for each member of the team, and also for the team itself, and how the team works together. And as you said, that in itself is a revolution in a way, because we're enriching ourselves and we're empowering ourselves to do our jobs in a better way and in a way that's less damaging and destructive to us. And that's very powerful change.
So in the book Presence Through the End, I have actually guide the reader through some of these very simple tools. They're not long, they're short, they're sometimes less than one short or two short paragraphs to reflect and sit. And that's actually, you can bring it with you and guide somebody else in it, so, and help people in that way. So I hope people can also use it, that book, in that way.
Yes, definitely. And one thing I wanted, even though we've been talking about being still and quiet and present with someone, I also wanted to mention that your book contains some really helpful questions that people can use in order to start a conversation. And you mentioned that earlier, because oftentimes there is a need to have conversations with our loved ones or with patients that we're caring for. And I find that's another stumbling block for people who say, but I don't know what to say. I don't even know what to ask. I don't know how to begin to talk with them. So there's a time for silence, but when there is a time for connecting through conversation, I was hoping you'd just share with us a few of your favorite questions that you've listed in the book that people can ask.
I got this idea from a very good friend who's a social worker in Germany, and her team, they asked, they had a complex list of admission, questions when new patients comes. But that the first question we asked actually helps us with answers all the questions. And they start with one question is often all the only question they ask. And they ask, what do we need to know about you to care for you? And I said, oh, that's a beautiful question. What do we need to know about you to care for you, as everything is in it. So if you're a professional caregiver,
I love that one.
And so if you have something, so very simple, isn't it? It's very simple. It's also in the book. And another opener is just a simple question like, is there anything weighing on your heart or mind right now? Just a general openers, and we can just sit down, offer this question. The person may take it or not. But they know we actually open if they want to talk about it. They know there is a person who would listen to them, who will listen to them. They may not take that offer, but it's there. It's an invitation. It's in the room, And if other openers in terms of when we have, if you're in the presence of somebody who's really, there might be a lot of anxiety, restlessness, fears, unfinished business maybe. They just don't know why is that happening to me. Just to really ask, what are your fears? What are your concerns? And also, what are your hopes? We often kind of get stuck in the negativity or the negative thing, but what are your hopes? Because every single step of the journey, there are hopes. We hope for that we were cared for, that we're not left alone, I really hope, I look forward to my favorite fruit tonight, or, So what are my hopes? What are your hopes? And also to look at, who would you like to be here? Are there people missing? Is there anybody missing you would like to have at your bedside? Is there anything that stops you connecting to that person? Anything you would like to share with them? Tell me, just tell me. Tell me more about yourself. What gives you joy? Is there anything that gives you peace? These are often people shy away from a spiritual question. And a social worker in San Francisco I worked with, he works with homeless people, and he asks them, and I find a very beautiful question. He asks them, what is your spiritual home? What is your spiritual home? And given that maybe some people, they may not consider themselves religious or not, but where do you belong? Where do you feel home? What offers you comfort? So there are kind of these questions you can ask, and it's not an invitation to kind of as a checklist to go down this list and maybe just sit with these questions yourself. And how would I answer that? What's my spiritual home? In the times of crisis, what would give me a sense of comfort? And then see, have it in your back pocket, and when the situation is right with a person, post the question and sit there and wait for the answer and see what happens and what unfolds.
I love these questions that you shared with us here, and there's so many more in the book as well. Mm-hmm. And so once again, the book is such a helpful resource if you find yourself at the bedside and knowing that, I think because sometimes you can perceive that the person you're with really does need to talk, but they need you to initiate the conversation. And so just having some of these openers is a great way to help them, to help bring them to the conversation that they want to have, to help them share what's on their heart, but they might not know exactly how to bring it up themselves.
Exactly. And it really draws them out. So we are inviting them, draws out their wisdom, their life wisdom. Then once we ask the question, to really listen and really also take time in responding, not just to jump in right away and thinking we have to fix it or solve it. If the person brings up a concern, just to listen and see where they take it, because so often we ask the next question or interrupt or don't worry, it's okay, and you get through it, where at least you're not, or at least you don't have diarrhea today, and, remember yesterday. So we just take the power away from the person. So just to actually to hold that space and listen some more. And Anna Lego is teaching authentic presence with me for many years, this course. She says, as a palliative care physician, my main tool is listening. And she was taught listen and then listen some more. And my advice, listen, really listen, take three deep breaths and then see what actually needs to be said. Because this person, the person also, when we're vulnerable, the patient needs time or a loved one needs time to process. And often it takes much longer than we think. So allow for space. Mm-hmm.
That's such a good reminder again for presence and stillness and slowing down in that moment to allow everything to be said that needs to be said.
Well, but it's also it's good reminder. Authentic presence is not just about stillness. It's also being, just to bring our full self. There's humor. There's laughter. there's connection. And sometimes, we just don't know, and we end up in very funny situations. And there, I have a few stories in the book as well, because we are human beings, and not to be afraid of failures, and that's how we live and learn and grow,
Yes, exactly. Well, Gosh, our time's going so quickly. But I wanted to briefly discuss, because something else that's in your book is the signs that death is drawing near. And I wanted to talk about that just because all of us who have worked with the dying are very familiar with the signs that death is close, but we may have a lot of listeners out there who are caring for a loved one or preparing themselves who have never heard this or never witnessed the dying process before. And I thought that might be something useful we could offer, that we could just go through fairly quickly some of the signs when you are caring for someone who's dying, signs that death is near. And so I wondered if you'd go through those with us as you've listed them in the book.
Yeah. So in the book, there is I actually did an interview with two good friends with Anne, the palliative care physician, and Beate Dirkschneider, social worker from Germany. And so we had a conversation, what are the signs and symptoms? And they actually explain it, they unpack it. But what we see is usually, and that's, every death is different, but there's common signs and symptoms, physical and non-physical signs and symptoms. One physical sign is increased weakness, dependency on others. So you might see the person is getting weaker, have a hard time getting up, dressing, slow in their movements, needs to spend more time, gets sleepier, and also doesn't want to eat and drink anymore. It's just really in small things. And that's good to know, especially for family caregivers. So much, they have less desire for food, less appetite. So I've learned to just make it just very small size. If it's two pieces on a plate, that's great, And so to be aware of that, it's less desire for food. We might see as mental and emotional changes. Maybe the person gets anxious and restless. There might be memory loss or confusion. And I might experience also the breathing pattern changes, especially as death really is imminent. And that can be cause quite anxiety for when we are at the bedside, when we observe it, when we bear witness to that shortness of breath. But the main point I've learned over the years to really be there and present and stay calm and not fear with a person or get sucked into the anxiety, but really that calm clarity of mind, stability is then really, really helpful. And just speak in a calm voice, in a clear voice. It's very soothing and prop them up in the bed so they get a bit more space and in their lungs. Some people may have what some call hallucinations. They may see people at their bedsides, but I don't think they're hallucinations. They're visions, They're entering a different world. They're about to enter a different world. So they may see that relative at their bedside, and they feel they're greeted by their loved ones, welcoming them. So that can be actually very reassuring and comforting. So not to dismiss that, or just to see, we can ask them, tell me more, what do you see, how do you feel, and to explore that with a person. Sometimes there can be also, and that's not so much spoken about, is also frightful visions, so when that happens, to really, then our physical presence, the light touch, the soothing voice, to help them, this is actually not happening. I'm here with you now, and just to try to ease their fear, ease their confusion. And I've seen it, when we're actually present and we are willing to stay with them, it really helps them to calm down. Another thing we might come across is people may say, and that's a classic, you probably, Karen, have heard it, I like to go home. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily they like to go home to their old home if they're in a nursing home or hospital. Not always, but at the very end, the home might have a much deeper spiritual significance. So that people
dying person is talk in metaphors, to really be open and listen out to what they're saying and what's behind it and explore it, and especially close to death. So watch the language. And often in hindsight, later we realize, oh, this is what the person meant. I want to go home. Oh, actually, yeah. Yeah, so their dream life also may become more active, and the waking and the sleeping might just become one. So we might see at that as well. So that's some of the things I've observed, and they're all unpacked in the book. And actually also things we can do, comfort care, comfort measures of helping people through it, and also deal with our own, maybe fear or anxiety around these things. Mm-hmm. And get the help of the palliative care and hospice team. I find it very, very helpful when your loved one is dying, really be informed. Let them tell you what you expect. How does the dying actually happen? You know, and let them explain it to you. So I find it helpful. Maybe not everybody would agree, but I find it helpful. I've seen people as kind of just calms down the anxiety of not knowing what to expect. As soon as we actually know and we understand, oh, this is part of the natural process, depending on the disease process, that's to be expected, you know, and that's natural. So don't worry, that's part of the natural process. And here are ways we can offer comfort, and we can offer care, and through your presence, you will help the person through it.
Yes, definitely. So that's one reason I just wanted to mention that, and also that it is a feature at the end of the book. So that's why it's a great bedside book for lay people who are caring for a dying loved one to have on hand, to be able to refer and see, oh yes, what's happening right now is a normal part of the dying process. So I don't need to fear it or question that something's going wrong. This is natural and normal. So I appreciated that you included that in the book. And I'll remind our listeners that I'm talking with Kirsten DeLeo, whose new book is just coming out now, called Present Through the End, A Caring Companion's Guide for Accompanying the Dying. And so, Kirsten, we're out of time now, but I wanted to ask you, where can listeners get a copy of your book, and then where can they find out more about your retreats and courses and workshops?
So the book, I hope, will you find in your local bookstore. You can order it as a print copy. Any online service, online shop has it. So it should be available as print. As I said, also audio, as an audiobook. I think it's great as an audiobook, especially if you're driving in the car and getting ready, or we are maybe flying to our loved one and listening to it on the plane, you know, and also as well as an ebook. So you can find out more about Authentic Presence either on my personal website, kirstendeleo.com, or Authentic Presence, and that's authentic-presence.org, about upcoming trainings. Also, we offer online courses, a professional certificate in contemplative end-of-life care, and online course for family caregivers. So we're really serving all caregivers, professional or family lay caregivers.
I'll include those website links on the show notes for this episode, which you can find at eolupodcast.com. And so, Kirsten, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and wish you the best of luck with your book.
Oh, thank you, Karen, and thank you for having us. And I really wish all the listeners really well, be well, and really take care of your good hearts. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirsten. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kirsten, and that you'll look into her book, present through the end. And if you go to the show notes for this episode at eolupodcast.com, look for episode number 214, and you'll find links there for Kirsten's website and also for the book and learning more about any of the work that Kirsten's doing on that page on the show notes. So before I go, a couple of announcements. Once again, I keep mentioning this every week, but I just want to make sure everyone knows about it. The Beautiful Dying Expo is coming up fairly soon now in San Diego, November 2nd. And you can go to beautifuldyingexpo.com to learn more about it. Hope you'll attend and take part in the workshops that'll be taking place and panel discussions. And there'll also be an expo with a trade show, basically, with a lot of vendors with booths. You can find out about services available. So that's beautifuldyingexpo.com in San Diego, November 2nd. Also, Before I Die Arizona is taking place at that same time in Scottsdale, Arizona. You can go to beforeidieaz.com to learn about that event, which is taking place October 30th through November 3rd, once again in Scottsdale, Arizona, beforeidieaz.com. Finally, I want to thank all of you who've been supporting this podcast through my page at patreon.com/EOLU. I really appreciate your contributions. Every month, it helps me keep this show on the air. If you're interested, you can go to that page, Patreon, patreon.com/EOLU, to learn more about how you can become a monthly contributor. And for as little as $2 a month, you can support the podcast and you'll receive some special bonuses for joining our teams. And thanks again to everyone who for the past couple of years have been supporting me. It makes all the difference to me. So remember, there'll be a new episode next week, every Monday, always something new to share with you, sometimes interviews, sometimes solo episodes. So check it out. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, that's a new one I just signed up for, and also Google Podcasts, and then you'll be able to listen on your smartphone or other device if you have an app for one of those platforms. Otherwise, you can just come to the show notes, eolupodcast.com, and you'll be able to listen to each episode. You can scroll back through all the archives and see the old episodes there, that in case there's something you want to listen to from the past. So until next week, when we're together again, remember, we are here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings your way, and love your life right now in this present moment. It's precious and it's fleeting. See you next time. Bye-bye.